it's not an actual bagel. It's not made out of like regular bread. It's one of the ancient grain things.
Ancient grains.
I went to the gym tonight and I came home and had a pizza.
What's up, Houdat Nation, and welcome to the Dome Patrol United Saints Podcast.
What's up, Houdat Nation, and thanks for joining us on the Dome Patrol Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff, and in this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about college football and whether or not we believe it's going to become the NFL. We also are going to talk about best or favorite things about Saints history, and also maybe predictions for the 2022 NFL season. So we're going to have that. I've got a couple of final thoughts I know are going to be interesting to talk about. So put your seatbelts on, keep your hands and legs inside your earbuds at all times, and enjoy the show. With us on this week's show, we have Wesley, James, and Scott. Welcome to the show, fellas.
Evening.
Thanks for joining us. So let's start with the college football situation. I know this is a Saints podcast, but it's related because my prediction is that college football is essentially going to mimic the NFL. They're already going to be paying players. They're already paying players, right? So now you have essentially
gone on for years.
Professional athletes. Well, officially and legally paying players.
Legally.
Right. And then now with the SEC essentially gobbling up as many teams as they can for the next several years, the SEC almost looks to be replacing the NCAA, if not just becoming a super conference, right? And then, and I think Jason was on the WhatsApp channel when we were talking about this. For those of you listening, we talked about it in our WhatsApp channel, and I think Jason had made the comment that essentially he sees it become the NCAA becoming, or at least in football, becoming two super conferences, almost like the AFC and the NFC. I guess they would get their playoffs the way they would want them at that point, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can do your playoffs and do it one national championship kind of thing.
And so that is where college football goes, where you have two conferences left, you know, East and West, whatever you want to call it. Do you like this? Do you want college football to essentially become identical to the NFL?
I don't know that it would be identical, but I don't necessarily mind it either. I'm not one of those kind of old school that has to stay the same. It can't change. You know, the reason why they don't have playoffs, a lot of people will complain about the bowls, like, you know, you have the Rose Bowl and all this other crap. I mean, you could still have those as playoff games like you do now. I kind of like the idea. I think it kind of simplifies things a little bit, and you won't have to worry about maybe necessarily the rating system. You can go by record like you do in the NFL and have tiebreakers. It takes out the argument every year of who should be ranked here and who should be ranked there, you know, kind of thing. The only issue I guess would be strength of schedule. In the NFL, you have a salary cap to where everything, you know, is supposed to be quote unquote level. Whereas in college football, you have weaker and stronger teams.
Right.
I don't know if maybe they can level the playing field with the NIL where it eventually has a salary cap where it kind of makes all things level. I don't know.
If you're going to mimic the NFL, then that's where it's going to be headed. I mean, otherwise, yeah, your oil industry teams in Texas are going to end up buying all the players in a couple of years.
It's happening now. I mean, you look at like Arch Manning going to Texas. I mean, that was strictly, I would think, a financial decision.
In theory, what I think you're going to end up with is basically the two teams that end up in the two super leagues, the two super conferences, that's going to end up replacing what is the FBS. And then the leftover teams and what used to be Division 1, 2A, which is the football championship subdivision, the FCS. I think that basically ends up becoming the second. I mean, it's going to be exactly what it is now with the FBS and FCS, but there's going to be some of these bigger teams that are getting left out are going to end up being in the FCS and dominating that. So, I mean, some of them, would Tennessee, and I'm using Tennessee as an example, like they're not going to leave the SEC, or, but would Tennessee rather go, you know, in a normal season, three and seven in the SEC, or go win the FCS, or whatever the secondary league is going to be. I don't know if it's going to seem that much different overall. Like, we'll just kind of see more bigger schools playing each other instead of dodging each other. And, you know, LSU signing up to play University of North Texas. You know, I think we'll see. They'll be forced to play Oklahoma State and teams like that. So
I wonder if they could almost do it soccer style, where you have like two different, you know, a bunch of different leagues, and you get regulated or move up. Things like that. I mean, you could go that.
You mean relegated?
Whatever, relegated, regulated, whatever you call it.
I mean, this is the problem.
In the wrong place.
I think that would make sense if this was a professional league, but being in college where the players are going to play for two or three years.
Aren't they already kind of professionals if they're getting paid? I mean, they're basically professional athletes.
Yeah. I was about to agree with you, Wesley, but the fact of the matter is you see all these college kids jumping schools left and right the moment they get more money. Like, there's no loyalty in college football anymore.
And I do believe that the transfer system has to change very quickly within the next two or three seasons. That's going to end up being a big problem as this money keeps ballooning.
Right. It's the Wild West right now, and everybody's taking advantage. And then you start to create rules around that to deal with that. That's how growth happens. That's how change happens. I like the idea of these. If you're in these two conferences and you have multiple divisions, then your scheduling becomes the next thing. And then you eliminate all of your powder puff games, which is good or bad. I don't know. In a way, it's good because you're not going to have an undefeated champion anymore. You know, Alabama's not going to run the table every year. Granted, they might for a few more years as long as Saban's there, but.
In theory, that becomes more difficult. My other side of it, and I just don't want to see, I do not want to see the college football playoff go beyond eight teams. It's difficult to find seven teams that deserve to be in the discussion. And I mean, what we're going to end up with, if we keep, you know, expanding like this, is we're going to end up with some crazy team that goes 7-4, I mean, getting hot, or somebody getting hurt against one of their opponents, and some 7-4 team winning a national title here in a few years.
NFL could do that. I mean, NFL, you could be as a wild card and win the Super Bowl.
And again, that's part of the thing that separates those two sports. I mean, there's two alignments in the way they're watched. I mean, that's the fun, I believe, of college basketball. And when you have that, this is not what I'm interested in for college football. And maybe I'm just used to the way it's been and the way the bowl system is. And there's so much money out there. I just don't see them dividing up that way. And I don't want my college football season going into the Super Bowl.
What do you want it to be then, Wesley? You want just the one playoff concept, like two playoff game concept, to stick around?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind six teams and the top two teams having a bye. I think that when we get above, I mean, in eight teams, I can deal with, but then you're getting three extra games in order to get to the championship. That just ends up being a lot. And the top four is fine. There's typically like one team they can argue, like, why did this one team get left out of the top four? But, I could go up to six. Anything above six, I think, gets crazy. And the six is kind of weird, but you gotta choose who gets the buys.
I don't think above six gets crazy.
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody.
I think the fact that it's been four has kind of honestly concentrated now the skill players to an even fewer amount of teams. Whereas if you spread it out, in addition to the NIL stuff, I think you're not going to run into the fact of, oh, there's only three or four truly worthy teams. I think you'll find more worthy teams as it expands, more NIL money gets thrown out there. So I'm in favor of expanding playoffs.
Are you in favor of the two super conferences, the SEC versus the not SEC?
I mean, I know that's where it's going, but to me, that's not college football. I'd prefer it not be that way, but it's not going to stop. But I'm not going to be a fan. I mean, it's going to be a baby NFL. And it's like, yeah, we have the NFL. We like the NFL. Also like some of the differences in college football. And now you're going to get rid of a lot of that. And I'm not really a big fan of that.
What is the SEC's goal here? Because the
make as much money as possible.
I know, but how do you do that when you start? You're going to dilute your product. There is no way that all these teams are going to be.
Well, you're going to have your good teams, and you're going to have your shitty teams. But it doesn't matter. The money is going to be so good, it doesn't matter.
You're not going to make more money seeing Alabama play Clemson twice every year in a regular season game than you are watching Alabama playing some little college down the road and beating the brakes off them.
What are the
right? Why do you think they added Texas, even though Texas is middling at best? What are you going to get these Alabama and Texas matchups?
I could see Texas not being middling anymore within NIL.
Texas will always be middling. Texas has had the most money out of anybody for the last decade.
If Arch doesn't have anybody to throw to, it ain't gonna matter.
Don't they have a good quarterback coming up?
Yeah. Again, if you don't have anybody to throw to, it ain't gonna matter.
That's what they said about Drew Brees, and look at what he did.
So Arch Manning's Drew Brees now.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
It remains to be seen. Who said you can't say he's not? You can't say he is.
I could say Arch Manning is not Drew Brees right now.
Drew Brees from Purdue.
This is me. Doesn't, you know, I follow LSU. I watch college football. To even out the kind of competitive balance in a more fairer way, can you not restrict the amount of out-of-state recruitment teams can do? So the majority of your people from LSU can't go to California, and I know it doesn't happen very often, but you recruit in state more, but restrict the out of state.
It happens naturally. I don't think you can do that though. I don't think there's any legal way that you can tell a kid they're not allowed to go to a school.
Right.
If I'm a football player and I want to go to San Diego because I want to go to school there, you're telling me that you're not allowed to play football if you do.
Well, you are, but there's a limit to how many people they can.
Well, fuck that. Fuck you for suggesting that. You and your non-freedom self.
I thought this was America. Huh? Isn't this America? I'm sorry. I thought this was America.
It's cool to consider the Louisiana team, the Alabama team, that, you know, to really take it and say, like, this is a team of Louisianians. Can they be better than everybody else?
Louisianian?
Yeah. That's a cool idea, but you can't. I don't think you can. I don't think you can relegate that. I mean, regulate that.
I see what all you right did there.
Yeah,
it was just a suggestion, because over here in the Premier League, teams can only recruit a certain number of people from outside of a radius around their stadium, and there's certainly a limit on how many players you can recruit under the age of 18. From other countries.
And I can see that from a professional standpoint, but as a college, and there's a school academic element to it where, I don't know, and being under 18 when you're recruiting them.
Also, I mean, like, yes, there's a different positions in soccer, but potentially everybody runs and kicks the ball. In football, like, you don't need just everybody with the same skill set. I mean, so many different things that you're looking for with offensive linemen and wide receivers and stuff like that. It can become weird if they stuck in there.
Oh, yeah. You can have three linemen, two receivers, a quarterback, right, a running back.
Well, but then what are those kids like? They grew up, they don't look at other schools. So it's kind of weird. Like when they start to, what other schools start coming out of their area and finding those kids that got skipped over that were still, you know, the seventh best person in the state, but the first six were all at the same position. So it just can get weird with that.
And there'd probably be ways to get around it. Like, you know,
there's more than one school in a state though, right?
Not really. Not if you're good. Not in Louisiana.
You could be like, I want to go to LSU, but I live in California. So my senior year, I'm going to move to Louisiana.
Yeah.
My senior year in high school. I mean,
yeah, but that takes a lot of effort. I mean, to uproot your family and move to another state.
People would do it.
They also,
the
good thing that could come out of this is, one, I really think that, like I was saying, it would eliminate these major schools playing trashy schools that they should not have on their schedule. Also, some of the cross-conference games that we wish we could see, and like people were like, they want these matchups in the playoffs. You could have those in the regular season now, which is kind of like, I mean, really more than ever, the regular season become the whole season becomes the playoffs to lead into it. Because, I mean, you're not just looking at the, you know, at the end of the year, who's playing in the SEC title game, like every game. If you're, again, if Alabama's playing Oklahoma State and then Ohio State and then Miami, I mean, all of those are potentially playoff games.
Yeah, I think Scott's point, though, if it goes this way, it's got to be done on record rather than six people sat in a room deciding who's going to be one, two, three, and four. Mm-hmm. It's got to be done on record.
I mean, that's the one thing that I would like to see change about college football is I don't like the arbitrary, not arbitrary, but I don't like that the sports writers and the coaches poll, all the, you know, the BCS, the people just get to pick the rankings versus just it be about win and losses. But I also understand that until you have an equitable schedule, you can't go by wins and losses. Cause yeah, I can take LSU and play Iowa or something and cream them and get my records. And so yeah, until you can create enough, call it equity between the teams to where a schedule record is fair across the board, then we're stuck with the polls.
Right. And Georgia beating Southwest Arkansas State School of, you know, technology should not be at 62-0.
Right.
Shouldn't count the way it does versus when Ohio State beats Michigan, you know, and stuff, you know, by a point.
Yeah.
So
I wonder if they could make almost like a ranking system to where if you play this,
you mean team, like the BCS?
They have that.
no. Like, let's say if you play this team, it doesn't count as many. Like, it doesn't. Let's say
the strength of schedule factors into the computer system.
It
factors into the computer system that the BCS uses.
So here's my question. Back in the day, I mean, was it a matter of opinion, and now it's actually just an actual algorithm that just calculates?
Along with the still matter of opinion. No, I do agree with that. I don't like the fact that people can get in a room and be like, well, I think this. You're still basing it on the opinion of a person.
Yeah, I don't like the opinion.
Yeah, the computer thing is weighted in there, and I used to know this, but the computer part with strength of schedule and how much you won by and all that is weighted in there, but it's like 25% where the vote the votes do are higher.
See, I don't like that. No.
If they're going to do it that way, the strength of schedule and your score against other teams should be the higher weighting of the.
Let the algorithm set a fair algorithm and let the out. Yeah, if you want to pad your schedule with a bunch of powder puff teams, then you're not going to earn enough points for that to matter. Fine, that's fair, because that's up to you. You just want a good record, but you're not going to compete for the championship. But if you want to, and then you'll start to see teams that'll start to schedule games that are a little bit more competitive, just because they know that what kind of a score they need to achieve in order to get into the playoffs.
Well, that's been a thing that LSU's been doing for years, which is scheduling their season opener against, you know, some sort of powerhouse. I mean, we've played Wisconsin, we're playing Florida State this next year. We've done this for a while now, of that season opener being a big game.
That's true.
They do something similar here in Europe to decide who is the top goal scorer across all the European leagues. So one goal in the Premier League is worth two goals in a weaker league. So if somebody in the Premier League scores 20 goals and then somebody in a weaker league scores 38 goals, the Premier League goal scorer would finish above them because their goals are weighted more because it's a more difficult league. So it's not, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility to do something like that.
It's funny. I thought you were going to say one goal on the pitch is equal to in the bush or something like that.
All right. I think that's pretty good on the college football front on this New Orleans Saints themed podcast. Now let's talk about what do we call it? Like bests and favorites. So we're about
to... You mean Saint stuff?
So yes, Saint stuff. So I saw this tweet. By now it's probably a month ago. And it showed kind of like little, you know, a four-part picture of like Pierre and Darren Sproles, Hilliard Hayward, Deuce and Reggie, Kamara Ingram. And it was kind of like, who is the best running back tandem in Saints history? And there was a little bit of a back and forth from Saints fans in there. And so it kind of made me want to go into like, who is the best what in Saints history? So I do want to start with that one. I do think it's a pretty good conversation to be had as far as who's the best running back tandem in Saints history. Out of those four, I mean, clearly that's going to be your four bets. No other tandem would even come close. I mean, Mario Bates and Lorenzo Neal.
But since we know it was Mark Ingram and Adrian Peterson, are we just debating what's the second best tandem?
See, I was going with the Mario Bates and Lorenzo Neal.
Do y'all remember Peter Schrager doing that? He went and he immediately said it was the best running back tandem in football as soon as we signed him.
I mean, it potential could have been in there. In Peterson's prime. Okay, so for real though, I mean, Hilliard, Hayward, do you just knock them right out? Is that number four?
Well, Hilliard, Mays.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Hilliard, Reuben, Mays.
Okay, so you would say they're better than Pierre and Sproles?
Define better.
Now,
let's put it this way: you're building your All Madden team to go and do whatever. Which tandem do you pick?
I'm taking Hilliard and Mays.
Really? Over Pierre and Sproles or Kamara Ingram?
Kamara's on a different level.
Pierre and Sproles were the running back tandem in 2011, right? For the best offensive season we've ever had.
Where was Deuce in all this?
Deuce
and Reggie.
Yeah.
Deuce and Aaron Stecker? Oh, I guess
not. Aaron Stecker.
I was putting kind of Deuce and Reggie together.
What about? I mean, we did have a Super Bowl with Reggie Bush and Pierre Thomas.
That's a good consideration. So who are you voting for?
Ready to leave out Gil Fenerty and
Gil Fenerty. I'm still going Reuben Mays and Dalton.
I'd probably go Pierre Thomas and Darren Sproles because for that season or two they were part of one of the greatest offenses in NFL history and a big part of it.
All right. Yeah,
I think I'm back and forth on the two, and I think that Reggie had the better impact on special teams than Darren Sproles did. They were close. They both did great. I think that Reggie with his punt return touchdowns gets the nod there. So I'm going to take Reggie and Pierre barely over Sproles and Pierre.
Interesting that no one's taken Kamara and Ingram though.
I think it's Ingram that y'all are claiming you don't want, but Ingram is the Saints' all-time leading rusher.
But that's because he played here longer than everybody else. It's not because he did great.
Not Deuce, did he? Has he played here longer than Deuce?
Deuce would have more yards. Deuce had like a lot of long runs that would get called back for holding.
What do you have?
Like these little shitty holding penalties. He had like 80, 90 yard run.
Damn, I mean,
Ingram's had 8 seasons here. I mean, that's it. I mean, Reggie only had 5. Deuce had, when was he drafted? 2001 to 2008. So he basically had 8. I mean, Deuce and Ingram had the same number of seasons.
Didn't Deuce miss a year, though?
He did.
Ingram missed several years.
I think Pierre and Reggie would be my close second. Because kind of like what Wes said, but also because of Super Bowl.
My thing with Pierre is, I mean, y'all remember, like, Pierre, nobody ran a screen like Pierre, and he was just phenomenal.
Alvin Kamara?
Pierre was better at the screen than Kamara.
I don't know.
We might have had a better screen blocking line at the time.
I think Pierre Thomas had a much better screen blocking game than Kamara's ever had, but Kamara on the screen is almost unstoppable. Look at that touchdown he scored against the Packers a couple of years ago, where he should have been tackled 20 times.
All right, I'm going to go with Kamara and Ingram. Fuck it.
So,
pick something different.
There you go.
Because I want more roach clips.
So if you were able to take two different people and create the running back tandem, who do you create and put together as your best running back tandem?
Kamara and Deuce.
Deuce and AK, yeah.
I think it's either Deuce and AK or it's, man,
Fenerty.
AK and Dalton would be pretty freaking ridiculous.
I don't know if I go AK and Pierre.
Similar. too similar, right?
But AK and Reg would be too similar if they're both in the backfield.
What are you going to do?
I think I've got to take. I mean, it's either AK and AK or Pierre, and then either Hilliard or Deuce, and you any one from this side, and one from this side. I would combine, and I think I'd AK and I think Hilliard. I barely take over AK and Deuce.
All right.
Different NFL. You put, I mean, and as strong, as big, as powerful as Deuce was, Dalton Hilliard was playing a different kind of football. And you put him in today's football, and I mean, I don't know who tackles him. There's not, I mean, many people, it's not, it's just not the same game as far as the violence. And
what about AK and Ironhead?
I mean, I think
you can keep Ironhead as a fullback.
Ironhead was fun. I mean, imagine him as a fullback in today's NFL, dude. Oh,
gosh.
I'd love to see that.
Gosh.
All right.
I don't want that Falcon.
All right. Next one. How about the, I think y'all talked about something like best free agent acquisition in Saints history. We don't have to take too much time.
Was it Drew?
You have to take Drew out.
Exclude him.
He's arguably the best free agent signing in the history of the NFL.
I'm taking Drew out. I got to either go
him or Reggie White, I guess, would be the best free agent signing of all time.
Yeah.
Are we just talking Saints?
Yes.
I got to either go DeMario or Vilma.
Vilma
was the trade.
Was a trade? Okay. Yeah, DeMario.
It's either DeMario or Greer or Jabari. Yep. I mean, it's one of those. I don't know who would be fourth after Drew and those two. And who gives a crap? Those three are way above anybody else.
Sproles was a free agent, I guess.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. So Renee just said, how do you remember all this? I just remember that they played for us.
Hey, and here's the deal, James. Hey, if the Saints don't screw up
podcast.
And if the Saints don't screw up and get rid of Sproles three seasons too early,
yeah,
Darren Sproles is right behind Drew,
yep,
and by far over DeMario and all as the yep. second greatest free agent signing by the Saints.
Yep.
We screwed that up so bad, getting rid of him those three or four seasons early, and I liked that they were doing it at the time because it was like the Saints typically weren't cutthroat and they kept people too long and all, but the it was the right move. If he started to go down, and I mean, it was such a huge mistake going back, looking back at it.
Yeah. I remember his first ever game for the Saints, the Thursday night game against the Packers. And he did that kick return and you're just like, what have we got here?
It sucks. Like, I wish we had three more seasons of him getting 2000 yards each season, because my terrible lasting remembrance of him is, you know, he sets the all-time yardage record for a season without fumbling the ball the entire damn year until the playoffs against the 49ers. Yeah. And I mean, it's one of the worst stats you can think of. He set the record for the most scrimmage yards ever in the NFL and never fumbled the entire season until the most important game of the year.
I still don't like talking about that 49ers game.
I mean, you get an illegal shot to Pierre that knocks him out of the entire game and makes him fumble. And I mean, there's five different things that happened in that game that had no business going on.
Greg
and still almost won.
Greg fucking Williams and his all-out blitz in twat. Anyway.
All right. So best.
It's DeMario. DeMario. It's especially now and... I mean, it's
if you take out Drew,
you add in and DeMario, it's DeMario before you start factoring in the incredible low contracts that DeMario signed. One to come over here, it's one of the greatest deals. I mean, immediately, and then the way he's re-upped with us twice, which still very team friendly deals, he could have forced his way out of here for double the salary any time in the last few years. You start factoring in the weight of that, and he's just an incredible deal.
Yeah. All right. What about best draft pick And I will spare you best undrafted free agent. That's obviously Pierre Thomas.
Pierre Thomas.
I'm going to throw Jari Evans' name into the mix. Was he third round, fourth round?
Fourth round.
I mean, convince me it's not Colston. Because where he's drafted.
Yeah.
Now again, if we want to take, I mean, Lattimore is arguably the best cornerback in the NFL right now and one defensive player of the year. I mean, getting drafted, he was supposed to be a top five pick that falls down because of hamstring injuries that have not existed in the NFL. I mean, you can, but that's easy at that high draft pick. I mean, Marcus Colston, the seventh round, just what he's gone on to be is amazing.
Right. I mean, if you're not factoring away there were picks, then you'd have to go Ricky Jackson.
Oh,
I was thinking Willie Roof.
Well, Ricky Jackson's in the NFL Hall of Fame. So is Willie Roof. That's right.
So is Willie Roof.
Man,
right.
But Willie Roof spent too much time in Kansas City for me to.
Yeah. And well, did you see the Willie Roof speech the other day where he started crying? It happened 2 days ago. They have the offensive linemen have a big meeting every year with veterans and with the new guys.
Oh.
And Willie Roof was talking about, he's telling these guys, you come in here, no matter how good you are, you need to come in here and work. He goes, because I was always bigger and faster and stronger than everybody, that I did not work hard. He goes, and then I got injured, and then they kicked me out of New Orleans. And he started crying. Like, literally, he was like, I can't talk.
Oh.
And he's like, and so I went to Kansas City, and I figured out that I needed to work my ass off.
Wow.
And then he goes, and then I became one of the offensive linemen on the best offensive line of all time. So, I mean, it was, he didn't say thank you to New Orleans for kicking me out, but I mean, you could tell there's still it was an emotional thing for him. He broke down crying
about
that. He never worked hard here, and they knew it and got rid of him. He's like, I got bigger and I kept gaining weight and they got rid of me.
Wow.
Those are a pretty crazy thing the way that happened.
Yeah. That's pretty neat. I'm glad he told that story then.
I think it was good to tell. And I mean, he doesn't tell it in a way like I hate the Saints and why they do that to me. He does
what he's doing is that they did the best thing for him.
Yep, for sure.
Wow. All right,
Colston.
William.
Yeah,
Colston. Can it be Chris Olave? I mean, can we? Is it too early?
It's too early.
It's done. Too early. Okay,
we'll do this again in 5 years. All right. I was gonna say best play. I'm gonna. That's too. In the weeds, in the interest ambush. Of time. I mean, yeah, there you go. Best touchdown celebration or favorite? Not necessarily best, but what's your favorite in it?
The Joe Horn celebration.
I hate that.
Pulled the sofa out of the
goalpost. I hate that thing so much.
All right.
It's Air Drew.
Okay.
Because if somebody would have told you beforehand it was going to happen, you would have said, no, it can't. He can't do that. And even Drew said he had tried it before in practice and it never worked.
Yeah.
And the whole thing around that game,
around
that game in Miami too. Just the way it all went was amazing.
Lance Moore did a pretty cool touchdown first Saints game in London, where he scored a touchdown and then did the double knee slide celebration,
soccer type. Football.
We've had some cool defensive touchdown kind of. I mean, I don't know, like. You get the Super Bowl with Porter. Like, I mean, it's before the touchdown that he's celebrating, pointing, but like he's realizing as he's running, we're about to win the damn Super Bowl.
And he stands with his hands on his head.
That's a pretty, and then stops and like puts the hand on the hip. I mean, that's a, the celebration when he's at the 50-yard line.
Yeah.
Pretty
awesome. All right, there you go for those. The best wide receiver squad. And I bring that up knowing that this year is going to be the winner. But not this year. You can't pick this year.
Marcus Callaway, Traquan Smith, Kenny Stills, Deontay Harris, Kevin White.
James didn't say scariest. Week one last year, James is ready to fight anybody that was last year's team that had the best wide receiver crew. And we didn't need anybody.
That's because Jameis was going to make them all better.
Right? Kevin White was the number 7 overall pick, and we got him for a veteran minimum. Of course, we're going to be the best.
What a steal.
Hey, he's still sticking around on the roster. What can I say?
Right.
So,
I mean,
Colston,
there's the year there.
Meacham, Henderson.
Is it Super Bowl year?
Super Bowl year.
The Colston Cooks Michael Thomas year, because when Mike, and it also helps that Drew still had the arm. And if everybody remembers Michael Thomas's rookie year, he was catching 35 and 40 yard balls down the field a lot. Not, I mean, he was not doing a lot of slants. And Drew's lively arm. And now again, and that's what pissed Cooks off, is we'd run Cooks 50 yards downfield and Michael Thomas had come underneath him at 38 yards and get hit by a bullet from Drew. And then Willie Snead was just, I mean, he was playing the Lance Moore role of just being open underneath. And again, you still had the running backs that could catch. That was a pretty,
Willie Snead was a 1,000-yard receiver that year for us, wasn't he? Yeah. Or very, very close to 1,000 yards.
Man, has anybody ever just gotten in the doghouse? I mean, he was coming up on a career, like he was going to get a big contract if he did that a couple years in a row. And talk about got in the doghouse. Whether, I don't know if we ever
heard the full story. Deal with him?
We know he got
DUI, wasn't it?
We know he got the DUI, but is that really what some of the shenanigans that got pulled with the Saints team, is the DUI the thing that really just put him on the bench as our fifth receiver and we were losing games because we didn't want to play him?
Wasn't he part of the locker room issues with Junior Gallet and people like that? Wasn't that the story?
Maybe, I don't know. You got to watch out for those blondes.
So also, I'm thinking like in the old Troy Aikman, what's his name? Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith trio, you know, your 1-2-3 trio. What is the best Saints trio?
I've got them up there in Funko Pops. Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas.
Okay. Because they have to have played together at least one season.
They did.
Yep. Is that best trio for everybody?
That would be my best trio.
Or is it Drew, Colston, Pierre? Do they have a fighting chance for you?
Drew, Colston, Pierre.
Well, that was 2011, so it was the year of the most offensive yards we've ever had as a team when those three were. Three were together.
Yeah.
I mean, you could almost chuck Jimmy Graham into that as well, because 2011 was Jimmy Graham's year too.
Yeah.
So does it have to be receiver, running back, quarterback?
Yes.
It was Jimmy Graham 2011,
wasn't it? For this sake, it would be. It does have to be.
Well, Jimmy Graham thought he was a wide receiver.
And how'd that turn out?
He wanted to get paid like one. Yeah.
All right. So yeah. It's one. It's during this era, obviously.
Aaron,
right?
Brooks, Juice, and Joe Horn.
Good thing Jason's
anything
not.
That starts with Aaron Brooks, no.
Right.
Well, the second best quarterback in Saints history.
No. Not no.
That brings us. We're out of time, so that brings us to final thoughts. Who wants to go first?
I was gonna say I'll go first. It's a really random one. Today has been the hottest day of the year. In England today, it got to about 93, 94 degrees, and I feel like I'm dying. So I don't know how. I don't know how you cope. That's all okay. I'm gonna. I literally am today. I mean, it's what is it? It's 20. It's nearly midnight, and it's 23 degrees, and I'm sweating like you wouldn't believe. We don't have aircon because we don't need it. So I don't know how you cope. I really don't.
I don't know how we do it either, to be honest with you.
Yeah, today was the 14th day out of the last 16 that it was over 100 degrees here. So.
We might get 100 degrees on Sunday this week coming up. Might. Very, very rare. So, yeah, all power to you. I don't know how you do it.
I don't know either.
It won't be 100 degrees in October.
I'll tell you what I did yesterday. I got in the pool and I sprayed myself with the hose and I just constantly stayed as wet as possible while I was working outside all day. Wesley, you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, so we've got next Tuesday, the 19th, rookies report for training camp, and then veterans are a week after. Just giving everybody out there kind of a first, like, don't freak out about things happening in training camp. If Michael Thomas isn't practicing at the beginning, or Jameis is limping, or Jameis throws interceptions, like, he's supposed to be doing that and trying things out. Like, let's see this team play together, and hopefully we have a great training camp. Interesting thing that Alante Taylor is still not signed to his contract.
Oh.
I think that he was doing the mini camps and all, but that could be a real problem if it's not done by next Tuesday. And if we're talking about a competition there, and like we're sitting on our depth at cornerback and defensive back being a really big strength of our team, I think that we need him there by next Tuesday, getting experience. And it's weird for me that a fourth round pick is trying to reset the way that NFL contracts are done. And I don't know. Obviously, there's a lot we don't know, but he's trying to change the way guaranteed money is done. And like, chill, you're in fourth round. Like, be happy to be in the NFL. Maybe you're about to be a millionaire as soon as you sign the contract. Like, let's just get going. And then
is it him or is it his agent who's maybe his agent?
And again, it's probably his agent, but he's also in the last couple of days kind of started tweeting out vague, weird things. And who knows if they have anything to do with the contract or if they don't, or if he's just listening to
his agent is telling him what to tweet too.
Possibly. So it's just weird. We got everybody else signed. The Saints have never had a problem signing people. Like, we don't need to set a precedent here. Let's get this taken care of and get him in camp on time.
Yeah. All right. Who else we got? Scott,
me. Yes. Matthew Berry of ESPN announced that he'll be leaving ESPN. He's been there, I think, 15 years. Kind of the godfather of fantasy football. Anybody that's really played fantasy football has probably read an article by him or listened to him at some point. It's kind of interesting. I don't know. He hasn't really announced what he's going to be doing next, but just kind of interesting that he will be leaving ESPN. I mean, you got to think when he started 15 years ago, how much fantasy football has really grown since then.
I think he's realized, like a lot of people are realizing, that you don't need ESPN anymore, that you can just be the master of your own.
It's quite possible. But I mean, if they're going to,
Nick Underhill is another example.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, you know, ESPN, I'm sure, has paid him very well over the past. I mean, he does podcasts, he does TV shows. He's on TV constantly. I'd be interested to see. I don't know if he's going to another network or if he's going to do his own thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think after Bill Simmons sold the Ringer Network to Spotify for $200 million, anybody else with a big voice and their own kind of branding is interested in going that direction.
Right.
There's a precedent has been set for what can be done. I wouldn't be surprised if he's doing his own thing.
So with that, I'd say that's all the show we have for you right now. And we are going to thank our loyal listeners for downloading each week and telling all of your friends about the Dome Patrol podcast. Follow us on Facebook. Look for Dome Patrol podcast. Check us out on Twitter at Dome Patrol PCast and at Dome Patrol UK. Follow us on TikTok at Dome Patrol Prods, PRODZ. And if you want to listen to us the old-fashioned way, go to Dome Patrol Podcast. Say bye-bye, donkeys. Anyone, just say bye-bye, James.
Bye-bye, James.
Good night, Gudat Nation.